Hello, this is Judy Mario, and this is Choices. And today we are talking about when opportunity knocks. Are you going to be ready? And our wonderful guest today is Edie Racer. Edie, I've known Edie for years, but really haven't known her really, really well. We met many years ago at the National Speakers Association. Edie is one of those certified speaking professional people, of which there's only 240 women in the world that have been awarded that mark of excellence by the National Speakers Association. But she's also a change strategist and sought-after international speaker who has addressed thousands of organizations and associations around the world, on five continents, in fact. She's an authority on people and performance, and she has over 35 years of experience in behavioral science and motivation for personal and professional excellence. So we are really honored to have Edie here with us today to talk about when opportunity knocks. Welcome, Edie.
Thank you for having me, Judy. It's always a pleasure. It's a hoot. It's a hoot.
It is a hoot, and it's so cool that we can be on opposite sides of the world now and we're talking, and then people from all over the world get to join in and hear us. So, Edie, how is opportunity different than luck?
Well, you know, I think, you know, the old Chinese saying is, you know, luck is when preparation and being able to identify it comes together. But, you know, I think we often look at opportunity as something that just pops up in our face. I think we have to realize that when people say it's luck or whatever, that there's also a creation process there, that people are at work creating that luck or creating that opportunity. It isn't something that is always just a God-given gift. I think that can happen where, you know, you hear that with Elvis Presley and a lot of people where they almost seem to stumble on it. But you know what? They did all the work, or they had a natural gift to be discovered, but you know, there was something there in the making. You know, whether it's Oprah or Michael Jordan or whatever. I mean, Jordan was getting up at 4 or 5 every day. So what looks so seamless and easy for people often has a lot of hard work behind it that we don't recognize.
Yes, it's that, you know, my parents used to always say to me, the harder you work, the more the opportunity comes.
I love it. Perfect. Yeah, our parents have such a divine wisdom that we never gave them credit for when we were growing up.
I know. Don't they get smart as we get older? Let me ask you this. Is crisis or challenges that happen to us, are those really opportunities in disguise, or is that just something cute that people like to say in order to make us feel better when things are going wrong?
You know what, and that's a very good point, and I think it's both. It's, you know, the KFC story a lot of people may have heard, and if you're familiar with that, Kentucky Fried Chicken was doing a tremendous business. And all of a sudden, the DOT came in and said, we're going to put a road in the middle of your restaurant. And he was at an age where he really wasn't ready to start all over again. And so he had to look for other options and other alternatives. And that's how he decided to clone his recipe. And that's really how, you know, any of the franchise ideas of McDonald's and Wendy's and Hardee's, he started a complete revolution of having an idea, having a recipe, and cloning it, duplicating it, and creating the word franchise probably wasn't even in the dictionary. So that is a perfect example that, yes, crisis can be opportunity. But see, Judy, there again, there's that interim process of he created it. He scratched his head and thought, wait, what can I do to make the best of this? Now, if somebody just has a crisis and goes into a depression or, you know, starts drinking or whatever, then is crisis opportunity? No. So the bottom line is, it really ties into your whole series of books on choices. It all depends on the choices that you make, that we still are the makers and the creators of what the ultimate outcome might be.
Wow, is that ever true? Is that ever true? And I believe it has to do with whether or not we're kind of more negative in our thinking, or we're more positive in our thinking. You know, some of us are just naturally more positive and some are just naturally more negative, and I believe some of that has to do with our upbringing. Would you tell us more about possibility thinkers, and if we can change, if we're negative, how can we become more possibility thinkers?
Well, you know, and generally speaking, right brain people are known as the possibility thinkers. They're like the Energizer Bunny. They have ideas like popcorn. And the left brain person often, you know, is more of a critical thinker and sees all the problems that may arise. To tell you the truth, and I'm certified, and you may be familiar with the Herman Brain Dominance in this bridge too.
Yes.
Yeah, that there's four quadrants of the brain. And interestingly enough, organizations that, like IBM, I know uses it a lot, that have a good balance of all four quadrants, the upper right, upper left, and lower left, if they have a good balance, they are the most high-performance work teams and organizations. So, yes, possibility thinkers are people that they get ideas by the minute, they're out of the box, and that's what we need to shift society forward. But you and I, Judy, and you've seen it in MSA, there are people, and our good friend, Les Brown, who I just love, everybody loves Les, but I know he always says, leap in the net will be there, and I said that for years. I have to caution a little bit because I'm sure you can identify a lot of people in our organization that have let go of everything. They made a bunch of money in real estate, put it all into speaking, let go of all of their nets, and there was no net to catch them. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah. Yes, yes.
And there's so many people. I guess, you know, there's 17 seminars a day that you can do this and you can do that. And I am all for that. I mean, if you don't have a positive belief system, that's certainly where we all have to start. But we do have to back it. We do have to back it. And that's where some of the people get into trouble. I mean, even like with the laws of attraction, am I a big supporter of it? Yes. But there's a lot of people that are disappointed because they're like, wait a minute, I've been singing Kumbaya under the old tree, contemplating my navel, and nothing has come to me. And I think we forget that is kind of the seeds of the realities that we create, that is the first step. And generally that first step motivates us to take the second, the third, and the fourth, to do the work that is necessary to manifest and make it happen. So I think a lot of people have a misunderstanding of that whole process. So do we have to be possibility thinkers? Absolutely yes, or nothing will happen. But does that possibility thinking have to be tempered with due diligence and some of the left-brain critical thinking? You know, I think a lot of people on this call might say, oh, you know, opposites attract, and they're married to, if they're a right-brain person, they might be married to a left-brain person. And that balance can be very, very healthy. And then when they get a divorce, and I'm one of them, it was healthy to have somebody that curtailed me a little bit. When I got a divorce, I went wild with my possibility thinking. And you know what? Everything is a good possibility. And so some of that left brain critical thinking, and most of us, you know, there are some people that have a pretty good balance of both, but most of us, which is why we have boards, or Judy, smaller groups like us, I think you have a group of people that you run things by that can create that balance. So I do think that's important. I wrote a book, Winning, How Winners Think What Champions Do. And one of the best examples is Ron Wires, and he's now in Arizona, retired, in Green Bay the other half, and Wally Hilliard. They started Wisconsin, what was it called, Wisconsin Insurance or something, Wisconsin Employees Insurance. And they started in the garage. A story that we hear so often. Well, anyway, they created a big company that then eventually became Humana, Fireman's Fund, all names that you've heard. Lincoln National eventually bought them out and fired them. But one of the stories between those two generals, and when they got fired, they started another company. And then they started another. But Wally was the energizer bunny. He had 17 ideas a day. Ron had that critical mindset that shaped it like a ball of clay so that it would have the balance to manifest into something that would be productive and profitable. And I find that one or the other is just not good. Possibility thinkers, such as myself, you might tend to be in that direction too. And I'm sure you have stories where you let it run wild and it went into a dead end. Now, with people who are more left-brained and don't have that possibility thinking, they can, you know, we talk about things like analysis paralysis. They can get very, very stuck, Judy, and they will die with the music in them and never, ever sing their song. And that's pretty sad. So the bottom line is we need each other. We need each other.
We definitely do. I know I need someone occasionally to pull me back a little bit because I'm so creative and so out there in my right brain that I'm just like, let's do it. And sometimes I don't look at all the possibilities of things that might go wrong that I should be prepared for ahead of time. And that's a habit I have. And I wanted to ask you about that. Do habits hurt or hinder our ability to make predictions, or, and if they do, how do they do that? Do they keep us from going to opportunities that are profitable and provide prosperity, or do our habits help us? I'm not sure. I know that my habits take me all over everywhere. I have to really, like, hold back and get some good advice on how to be a little more logical.
Yeah. And you know, Aristotle, not a dummy by any means. And, you know, I asked the lab, Judy, I was doing a video with this guy that's 50 years younger than I am. We're kind of partnering. He has a karate studio, and I have that character building program for children. So, and he was saying the other day something about a cliche, you know, there's a cliche, you know, be the person that you aspire to be. And I was like, Sam, that's Gandhi. I wouldn't call that a cliche. Well, Aristotle said, first we make our habits, and then our habits make us. And there is nothing in the world, when you talk about choices in all of your books, there is nothing that sabotages choice more than habits. Habits control us more than anything, and part of that control can often be self-sabotage. And so what happens is that once we get into a certain way of being, it's hard to make the shift. Duty change has changed. The world has changed. The velocity of change has changed. And so habits can really become a routine and a rut. That it's almost like the roots that cause us to grow in a plant can then strangle us. The same roots that cause us to grow can be what strangles us. We don't know when to cut the cord and when to let go. So an example I'd like to give with that is Soros, you know, the big financial investor. And what he did is, you know, when the bull market changes to a bear market, whatever, I think it was when it was, which way did it go? I think it was the bull market. And what he did is he predicted that it was going to shift to a bear market. And he fired all his people. Now, Judy, this guy has made a lot of billions of dollars. Why would you fire the people who made all this money for you? And the reason he did is because Soros knew that those people probably would not shift their thinking. And they're thinking, what works in a bull market in terms of investing? It's just the opposite of what's going to make you money in a bear market, and he knew human behavior enough to know that they probably wouldn't make the shift. He fired those who made all that money for him, knowing that they would have such an ingrained, habitual pattern of thinking that it might be hard to make the shift. And that is why he can successfully be so profitable, because of his ability to predict and to understand that it's so hard to make that shift. is it impossible? No. You and I have to do it every day to survive in our industry. But is it a challenge? Yes. And that's where we have to be on top of our game every moment to be aware of conscious choices. Judy, we met each other probably, I bet you it's 20, 25 years ago, in the, it was in the ladies' room.
Yeah,
it is. You know what? Tell me you haven't shifted what you speak on and how you market today compared to when we met in that ladies' room 25 years ago.
Oh, yes, it is. It is totally, totally different. Listeners, today we are speaking with Edie Rather. Edie is a world-renowned authority on how to influence behavioral change for optimal performance. And I'm so delighted to have her here with us at Choices. And just remember, listeners, that we always want to talk about what you'd like to hear about. So please, please, go to my website, judimoreo.com. That's J-U-D-I-M-O-R-E-O.com. And sign up for my newsletter. And when you do that, you're going to receive my audio recording of Realize Who You Are. You'll get that free of charge. And while you're there, click on the link to receive a subscription to Choices Magazine. Choices Magazine with articles by all your favorite self-esteem authors, many of our Life Choices authors. In fact, Edie Rather is one of the authors in one of our Life Choices books, in the Life Choices book series. And you can find all of those books on judimoreo.com or on amazon.com. And so check those out as well. But today we are talking with Edie Rather, and we are talking about when opportunity knocks. Edie, who capitalizes more on opportunity? People with right brain or people with left brain, or do we really need to do whole brain thinking?
I think it is what we were talking about before, is whole brain. And, you know, some people are a perfect square where they have an equal amount in each quadrant of the brain, and they probably don't need others. But I'm a real off-the-chart right-brainer, and I think, you know, you're certainly leaning that way, that we do need people to create that kind of balance. But, you know, one of the things that is more, exists more in right-brain people is intuition. And that is listening to your gut. And a lot of the scientists, it's like 83%, I think it is. I have that book, Why Cats Don't Bark. It's on your soul's coding calling. And it's on intuition as connecting with it. And I think I quoted in there, it's like 83 of all of the Nobel Prize winners have said that intuition was a big part of getting the Nobel Prize, of what they had created. So I think a lot of times, Judy, we look at scientists as being left brain, you know, science, math is more of a left brain process. But the fact is, the Albert Einsteins of the world have a whole bunch of right brain processes going on, and one of them is that they tend to be very, very intuitive, and they listen to their gut. Now, I'll tell you, there's a lot of people on this call. I know there are a lot of people on this call. Whether it's marriage, divorce, a decision to take a job, leave a job, not take an opportunity, whatever it might be, that they wish they had listened to their gut. Judy, I have a psychotherapy background. I can give you thousands of people that will tell me that while they're walking down the aisle and they're ready to say, I do, they have this strong gut feeling that says, oh, my gosh. What am I doing?
Yeah.
Did you? Yeah.
And
the gut speaks to us, but I guess when you have 500 people in the church and 1,000 people for a reception pastor, it's pretty hard to say, oh, dear, I made a mistake, but let's just go party, which would be wiser, because divorces can be very expensive and hurting, and it really would be the wiser choice. But see, our gut, we only seem to listen to it when we get closer to the cliff. And when we're closer to, now here we're going to your choices again, when we're really close to making a decision or a choice, I don't think it's that our gut speaks, well, I think it does speak louder, because it's almost like that little voice that knows we're going on the wrong path, we're taking the wrong fork in the road, and it speaks so loudly that we no longer can tune it out. And that's why you know, it isn't until we're walking down the aisle that we get such clarity on this is right or this is wrong. But here's the other problem with it. People's intuition works better when they believe that their intuition works. So if you're like, oh, I don't believe in that hogwash, there have been studies done, on NOVA. They've done studies where people are just so accurate in their intuition. They had somebody come in the room and blow their belief system that totally, you know, blew away any positive thoughts they had about it. And thereafter, when they were asked questions, they weren't getting any of them right. The intuition was no longer working. So it's almost like a spoiled brat kid or something. It works better when you work with it and you support it and you believe in it. But here's the other thing, is that you have to listen to it. I mean, it's not that it isn't there. You have to make a choice to listen to it. Now, there's one other thing you have to be careful of. There are some people that are worrywart. And so they'll, you know, everything they think like, oh, I've got a feeling, you know, she's going to get in an accident. I just know she's going to get in an accident. That isn't true intuition. That is somebody who has a problem with anxiety and worry. And so we have to be clear on how we read our intuition, because intuition is what leads Donald Trump and a lot of people into some of their best opportunities. By the way, Donald Trump just bought the golf course down the road from me. A lot of it's intuition. Does he do his due diligence? Of course. But there is also that fact that you have to separate it from anxiety and worry, fearful thinking, and you have to separate it from wishful thinking. And there's nothing wrong with wishful thinking, but there are also the people like, oh, I just have a gut feeling that, you know, I'm going to be able to walk across the Grand Canyon without ever practicing it on a tightrope, and I'm amazed. That is wishful thinking, and I would think that, if you think that's your gut speaking, it is not. So there are a lot of distractions. A lot of it is being clear in your interpretation of your gut, and if you're clear, your gut is always accurate. So it's just, we just mess it up.
So am I hearing you say that you could have fear and desperation, and that might keep you from hurting yourself, or fear and desperation, would that sabotage our tapping into opportunity?
Exactly. Anybody that comes makes decisions or choices from a point of fear and desperation certainly can sabotage opportunities, but they are also sabotaging themselves. One of my favorite questions is, what would you be doing if you knew you couldn't fail? That is such a great way to get really in touch. And some of the coaching I do, that is one of the first questions for people to get clear on what their soul's code, their purpose, their calling and mission in life may be. And then they have to go to work to make it happen. But if you're coming from a place, if you're coming from a place of desperation, you believe every scammer on the block. And in my next book, which is Trust No One, Love Everyone, I will be writing about that, because I got into a situation where I lost millions, and it became a self-perpetuating cycle, because anybody that promised me, any scammer, and they were all crooks, and they're felons, I believed them because they said what I wanted to hear. So, once you get in that place of desperation, it's a self-sustaining cycle of really going downhill, and you really have to almost do a knee-jerk reaction to reset your mental consciousness so that you can start moving up again. But that is honest to God to you, the most, a point of desperation is the worst point for making any decision. That's kind of like why people will bounce back if they get a divorce and they feel kind of desperate because there's somebody that doesn't like being alone and they feel lonely. You know, we call those rebound relationships where they just grab the first person that comes along, because it fills the void, and you never want to make choices based on that. So as much as that person may look like an opportunity, it can make a bad situation worse. So if somebody is on this call and they're at that point of desperation, they really need to seek out a counselor, coach, a good friend, and sometimes friends just say what you want to hear, so that isn't always the objective ears that you need. They really need to reset their mental software and get a fresh start. You agree, don't you?
Yeah. I do. And Edie, I know that you have a decision-making model, the path to self-discovery. Would you tell us a little bit about that and how it can help each of us make these better personal and business decisions?
Yes, and that is part of what I did include in the book where I do have a chapter, Judy. This, to me, is the best decision-making model I've seen in over 40 years of doing training and coaching. I will tell you, if I had this model years ago, a lot of my mistakes could have been prevented, even as a right brainer. But 2000 Napier is the creator. He happens to live right kind of my neighbor. One of the more brilliant minds I know, and he happens to be Native American, so he uses those metaphors. But here's how it goes. That decision-making follows the particular sequence and process. And if you follow this, whether you're right or left brain, you will make better decisions throughout your life. Number one is white. It's the color white. And metaphorically, it is snow. And snow, especially if you live in Wisconsin like I have for way too many years, lovely state, but awfully mean in January. It's hard, cold, fast. So the first is white. Associated with snow, it's getting the hard, cold facts. Judy, as a right-brainer, that has caused me so many problems. I don't like doing my due diligence. I find it dull, dry, and boring, but the fact is, it's very, very necessary. And you know what? If you don't want to do it, hire a left-brain person that can talk on that kind of stuff and have them do it. Okay, step number two is green. It's grass. It's all about growth. That's where you establish your goal. So you may want, let's say you want a boutique. A coffee shop. Everybody wants a coffee shop or a boutique, particularly women. So all of a sudden you decide Starbucks shouldn't have all the business and you're going to have this cute little cafe and they're going to have poetry reading there. And I think that's a great idea. So those are your goals. But sometimes people have it hidden away. It's one of those things that it's got to be in a high traffic area. So that's where you go back to your due diligence. Here's the third step. And that is the color glass. It is the nut. And it represents all the obstacles and challenges that could get in the way. Here again, Judy, right-wing people, especially if they're as extreme right as I am, we don't like to look at the obstacles. I get mad at people that bring them up because I think they're negative. And, I paid about $100,000 in PayPal. If anybody out there wants a PayPal, I've got some in my garage. You can have them.
I'm so sorry. I'm going to have to interrupt you, and I know that this model is in the book, When Opportunity Knocks. It is in the Life Choices Navigating Difficult Paths book, and if people would like more information on how to get that, they can get it on Amazon.com. So I'm sorry that I interrupted you right in the middle because this is such interesting information, but we're running out of time, and I just want to tell our guests because I know you have 7 books and 15 anthologies out there and so much more good information. So would you tell our listeners how they can reach you to get more information from you?
Raether.com, R-A-E-T-H-E-R.com. Wings for Wishes, Stop Bullying with Edie. But my phone number is 704-658-8997, and email is just my name, EDIE@RAETHER.com. And I'll just say the other two steps, Judy. The next is yellow, which is resolution, and the last is red. It's fire, it's passion, and it's running it through your emotional gut to see if it fits. But, it's all there in the book, So look forward to joining you all again, and thank you so much for having me, Judy.
Well, you've been an absolutely wonderful guest. We've really, really enjoyed this, and I've learned a lot about looking about for new opportunities and not just waiting for them to happen, as I know our listeners have. Listeners, thank you for joining us today. This is Choices, and this is Judy Mario. Goodbye.